Hello, this is Tamsin Freeman from PI World, and I'm bringing you a podcast this week, which is slightly different to our normal video format. I'm joined today by Eric Townsend, who many of you will know for his weekly podcast, MacroVoices.com, where he covers the macroeconomic landscape from the perspective of an investor, and he generally has some brilliant speakers on his programme. Today, Eric's going to talk to us about his recently published book, Beyond Blockchain, The Death of the Dollar and the Rise of Digital Currency. Now, Eric isn't a Bitcoin fanatic. He's not into all the ICOs, but he is very much into the technology that this has brought to the forefront and the opportunities this gives to government and gives to central banks and could offer to monetary policy. Eric, I read the book over Christmas and I have to credit you with how you've taken a very dry and very complicated subject and made it very entertaining and very easy to understand. Thank you so much for joining us today and talking us through the book.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for the flattery. I think that's the most flattering description I've heard yet. So that's great.
So what's your background and what led you to write this book?
I was a software entrepreneur. I ran a software company in the 90s, and distributed systems in particular was my specialty. So I knew quite a lot about the technologies which form the basis of cryptocurrency and digital currency more than 20 years ago. And I'll admit to being a little bit out of touch with what some of the most recent developments are. But that was my specialty 20 years ago. And after retiring from the software business, selling my software company in 1998, I tried to be retired for a while, flunked retirement, and wound up reinventing myself as a private investor first, and then going on to manage a macroeconomic hedge fund. So my first career was technology, distributed systems focused, and my second career was macro hedge fund. So it kind of was a natural. You asked just before we came on the air, you know, how did I do all of the research? Well, the real reason that I wrote the book is that I realized that I had made a really, really foolish mistake. And it's one that a lot of other people in finance were making at the same time. And I realized that I had an opportunity to hopefully get other people to recognize that they were making the same mistake. And that mistake was to evaluate cryptocurrency and digital currency as if it's all one thing. Because cryptocurrency was really invented by some incredibly smart people who had an agenda, a very anti-government agenda of trying to design a currency system that would allow them to transact financial transfers that the government couldn't stop, couldn't interfere with, couldn't monitor, couldn't oversee. And what I concluded from that, and what I think most of the smart people in finance concluded, is, okay, look, you can create a digital currency system that works that way, that frustrates and annoys law enforcement, if that's what you want to do, and that'll work for a while, but you're never going to see a currency that was designed to frustrate and annoy the government advance to become the next global reserve currency. The government's too powerful. They could outlaw cryptocurrency if they put their minds to it. It would be a bit of work because cryptocurrency was designed to be difficult to outlaw, but it's entirely possible. So I kind of wrote it off, and what I failed to realize is, wait a minute, these guys who were thumbing their nose at the government really handed governments of the world a gift horse, and that was the invention of double spend-proof digital cash and distributed ledger technology, which the government has the ability to track every penny of wealth that exists on the planet and know who's got it, where they got it, when they got it, under what conditions they got it, and perhaps even has the ability to directly tax it without allowing the person being taxed any control over how much tax is being taken out. So these inventions that were designed by the cypherpunk inventors of cryptocurrency really have the effect of making it possible to create government backed digital currency. Now, I'm not necessarily persuaded that's the right thing for humanity, but I am convinced that eventually government is going to wake up and recognize, hey, these guys that were trying to annoy us with their cryptocurrencies invented some really cool technology that we, the government, can use to create a much more Orwellian oversight system that controls everyone's financial affairs much more directly. And I think that's the direction we're most likely to head in.
So what needs to happen technically in order to make digital currency a reality?
Well, I think the big technical breakthrough that we haven't seen yet comes in the area of distributed ledger. And I should explain what that means before we describe the breakthrough. For the entire history of the computer industry, going back to day one, the way everything always worked is there's some database, there's some store of data that somebody is in charge of. Somebody is the owner of that database, and they have control over it. What distributed ledger accomplishes is it creates an ownerless distributed database that nobody has more authority over than anyone else, where everyone is keeping everyone else honest, and nobody has total authority over the system. And that makes possible the creation of these digital currency systems. Now, there's two kinds of distributed ledger. The first kind is called a fully decentralized distributed ledger, and the example of that that everybody has heard of is blockchain, which is the distributed ledger that underpins the Bitcoin cryptocurrency. There's a problem, though, which is blockchain is based on an extremely inefficient algorithm called proof of work, which is literally designed to waste energy. And why in the world would you waste energy? It has to do with proving that you are not trying to cheat the system by disguising yourself as a whole bunch of different participants in the network. So the upshot of all this is that if you want to have a fully decentralized distributed ledger system, it comes at an extreme performance penalty because of this proof of work algorithm. And that's the reason that the Bitcoin network can only process about 7 transactions per second in real time across the entire network, which is very, very low performance, not enough to run the global economy on by a long shot. Now, there's another kind of distributed ledger, which is much, much faster, called a permission distributed ledger, but it has its share of problems as well. It works in a system where there's some master list of who's allowed to participate in this distributed clearing system called a distributed ledger. Well, if that master list can be hacked, then you could hack the overall network. A fully decentralized distributed ledger would be better in many ways, but it's very, very inefficient now. So what I call the proof of work barrier is the notion of somebody needs to invent a fully, completely decentralized distributed ledger, which does not rely on this very inefficient proof of work algorithm. Now, there's an outfit. It used to be called Swirlds. I think they've changed their name. The product is called Hashgraph. It was originally a permissioned distributed ledger, which would not really be suitable for a very wide-scale currency system. They claim to have cracked this proof-of-work barrier and come up with a fully decentralized distributed ledger system, which is orders of magnitude faster than blockchain. If they haven't, somebody will before too long. And when we get to that point, it opens the door for these digital currency systems to be much, much faster and more efficient than they have been in the past. So I think that's the big technical breakthrough that we're waiting for.
And when you say before too long, what sort of time frame do you mean? This year, next year, 5 years, 10 years?
I think it's probably the this year, next year time frame, certainly less than 5 years. But again, I'm speaking specifically about the question of proof of work and overcoming that barrier. Once we get through that, there are a lot of smaller hurdles that we need to get past. None of these systems have ever been designed to really be scalable to the degree necessary to create something that you could run the global economy on. The Visa credit card network can process something like 48 1,000 transactions per second. The very fastest digital currency systems that use permissioned ledgers are on the order of 1,000 or 2,000 transactions per second. So we've still got a long ways to go beyond just the proof of work barrier in terms of getting all the technology up to speed. But frankly, I think the technology will be there long before we get there socially. And what I mean by that is I do think the next major shift here is going to be away from these cryptocurrencies. I think what we're eventually going to get to is government-sponsored digital currency systems, which replace the major currencies that exist in the global economy. To get to that point, yes, you need technology that doesn't exist today, but you also need a profound shift in policy, in government thinking. And I think it's going to take longer to achieve that change of attitude by policymakers than it will to achieve the technology breakthroughs that are necessary in order to do this.
But surely the technology has to come into the right place first before the governments can start looking at it.
Well, I'm not necessarily persuaded of that. It's true that if somebody said tomorrow, okay, the government's changed its mind, it wants to commission and hire a contractor to build a global scale digital reserve currency system that replaces the US dollar as the world's global reserve currency. We don't have the technology to do that yet. But nobody in their right mind would suggest that. What we're already seeing is things like Christine Lagarde announcing on behalf of the IMF that maybe we need to be looking at a digital version of the SDR, the special drawing right, which is a type of currency system that's used to settle transactions or payments between central banks. It's not something that you use to, you know, buy something on Amazon with your credit card. So it has radically different requirements. So there are some things that governments might look to use a digital currency token system for tomorrow that are entirely within our ability to build. Furthermore, you're seeing smaller governments around the world starting to announce, hey, we really think the government of Malta, tiny little European country, said, hey, we really are convinced that digital currency is the future. We want to be a leader. We're going to adopt Bitcoin, a cryptocurrency. I don't think they've officially announced that it is a government sanctioned currency, but they've acknowledged cryptocurrency generally and said, this is the direction we want to move in. We see this as the future of finance. And I think it is becoming very politically popular just because of the millennial generation fascination with cryptocurrency. It's becoming politically popular in a lot of places for government policymakers to talk about this stuff, regardless of whether they're ready to do it. So I think that the transition has already begun to a public awareness of digital currency. What I'm waiting for is that political spin campaign that says we've got to harness the power of cryptocurrency and put it to work for the people by using it to tax the rich or to hold the fat cats accountable or something that is a designed for public consumption way of repositioning the message of we the government want to use this digital currency technology. I think that kind of political rhetoric will come long before anybody's ready to actually build those currency systems.
So in your book, the key to a digital currency is the adoption by central banks. So what are the benefits to central banks of digital currency? And are there any disadvantages to them?
Well, right now, the way that central bankers, just evidenced by their public statements, are interpreting digital currency is they're looking at the cryptocurrencies only, which were designed to frustrate and annoy central bankers. Needless to say, if that's the design goal, they're achieving that to some extent. Central bankers are not terribly amused by cryptocurrency. They're generally dismissive of it. I write in the book about Mark Carney and Klaus Knott's comments about digital currency, and it's very clear to me that they don't understand it. Now, what they haven't figured out yet is that just as you could design a digital currency for the purpose of frustrating central bankers, you could just as easily design and engineer a digital currency system for the purpose of giving central bankers far more powerful tools than they have today. So you could replace the very primitive monetary policy tools that are used today, such as policy rates and quantitative easing and so forth, with much more effective policy tools that are built into a digital currency system. That intuitive leap to get from cryptocurrencies, which were designed to annoy the central bankers, to using similar technology to create something designed to delight central bankers, they haven't figured it out yet. And that's one of the reasons that I wrote the book, was to try to portray this message. And frankly, I don't think that they are likely to figure it out on their own. The more likely scenario is that the private sector will recognize, wait a minute, if we use our efforts to design a new digital currency system, which is engineered from the ground up to please central bankers, one of the things that government will want will be better central banking tools, better monetary policy tools. But frankly, as we move beyond just the central bankers to the rest of government, they're going to see it as an opportunity for tax enforcement. I think that governments would love that idea, and I think that someone in the private sector is likely to design it and sell it to them.
Do you really think it'll go like that, or do you think it's more likely to come through, say, another financial collapse? Because that tends to be a faster catalyst than selling in a concept to government, which takes a long time.
I certainly think that another financial crisis will be used as the justification. We had a big collapse in 2008 and 2009. The central bankers bailed out Wall Street. It didn't really help Main Street. We went 10 years of propped up asset prices on quantitative easing, and then there was another collapse. And you, the citizen, deserve better than this. We're going to give you a new digital currency system so that the Wall Street fat cats can't take advantage of you anymore. It's going to make you safe from the bad guys, and we're going to replace it. I think something like that will be sold to the public as why everybody should welcome a new digital currency system. But I think that the real motives of government who are trying to impose something like that will be taxation and greater control.
Mm. So which are the countries? You mentioned Malta, but who are the real pioneers in creating digital currency?
You know, I don't think if we really ask the question in creating digital currency, in designing the next digital currency, right now, all of it has been done by the cryptocurrency crowd. And these are mostly people, and actually, I'll take that back. It was originally the cryptocurrency crowd that invented Bitcoin and some of the other cryptocurrencies. And what we've seen since then, not so much in the currency space, but in the settlement of other types of financial transactions, all the big banks have jumped on what they're calling blockchain technology. Now, as I said earlier, blockchain is a very badly flawed distributed ledger system because of its proof of work algorithm. But a lot of people using this buzzword blockchain technology don't actually mean blockchain. They mean any distributed ledger system that offers the benefits of a distributed ledger. And what we're seeing, I think, is those big banks were smart enough to know, look, we're not going to go and work on another cryptocurrency like Bitcoin. We know better than to think that governments are going to allow something like Bitcoin to seriously compete with government-issued currency systems. On the other hand, the way that we settle various things like wire transfers and securities transactions and so forth, there's a lot of power to this distributed ledger technology in terms of building better systems for banks to settle financial transactions. And so in the banking industry, there's been a lot of focus on this. But as far as national governments, I think we're really at the point of just a little bit of political rhetoric. Malta announced that they saw digital currency as the way of the future and we're going to be a leader in it. What does that actually mean? What are they doing to lead the way other than saying that in the public eye to call attention to themselves? Not very much so far as I can tell. Christine Lagarde has announced that central bankers should be looking at designing digital currency systems. I think it was very, very career strategic for Ms. Lagarde to be the first central bank official to say that. Does that mean the IMF actually has distributed ledger engineers working on something? I don't think so. I'm not aware of it if they do. I think we're at the political rhetoric stage. What that should do, though, is it is a signal to private sector technology development firms saying government is almost ready to buy something from you. Why don't you design something that you can sell to government?
But you do talk about Russia and China doing work in this area.
Well, Russia and China have a very strong interest in seeing the replacement of the US dollar as the world's global reserve currency. And I don't think that Russia and China are necessarily obsessed with digital currency for the sake of having a digital currency, but I think they see it as a very possible tool to displace the US dollar as the world's global reserve currency. And we see a lot of signs of this. You know, you would think if you look at what the US Federal Reserve or the Bank of England are doing with digital currency, they've looked at Bitcoin, they've kind of been dismissive, they haven't taken it too seriously. But the People's Bank of China has filed more patents and has hired more blockchain engineers than anyone else in the digital currency space. Sergei Glazyev, who's the father of the de-dollarization campaign, which is the campaign that Russia has mounted to persuade other nations to ditch the dollar and use other currencies for international trade, he's giving keynote speeches at blockchain conferences. Something's going on here. Now, does that mean that Russia and China are secretly in some laboratory in Siberia someplace, programming a new digital currency system that they plan to assert as a replacement for the US dollar and persuade everyone else to use? That's possible. It's plausible. Certainly, PBOC has hired a whole lot of blockchain engineers, and they're working on something. But I doubt that either of those governments would make the mistake of thinking that a digital RMB or a digital ruble is going to take over the world. So I think they're most likely to use all of the knowledge and talent that they've been amassing in the digital currency arena and use it to try to influence someone else in the world to create something that competes with and displaces the US dollar. I could be wrong. They may be trying to control it themselves. There was talk at one point when China first began hiring all these blockchain engineers, they said publicly to work on the digital RMB. The RMB or yuan is China's national currency. Yeah. So at one point they had this agenda of a digital national currency. They haven't talked about that recently. They dropped that from all of their public communications. Does that mean they're not working on it anymore and they changed to something else, or just that they're trying to keep it secret? It's hard to tell. But I think that what will ultimately prove effective is not a digital ruble or a digital RMB, but the creation of a supranational digital currency system, which somebody sells all of the central bankers around the world on. And I think it's more likely to come from the technology industry than it is from a national government.
Interesting. But at the moment, the dollar's king. There's trust around the dollar. So how can a digital currency get that trust that the dollar has? And will the U.S. be willing to let digital currency take away from the dollar?
Well, certainly the U.S. will not be willing to let digital currency or anything else take away from the dollar. And I think until just a few years ago, I would have said, hey, the dollar has just so much acceptance around the world. Everybody's happy with it. There's no reason to think anything could ever displace the dollar because it's so entrenched as the currency system that the entire world uses for everything, and they're happy with it. Well, what's changed is a whole lot of people around the world are not happy with U.S. foreign policy. They're really offended when the U.S. takes unilateral action to say, okay, not only are we going to sanction Iran, and that's something that we're going to do without support of the United Nations, which has not sanctioned Iran, but we're going to quote unquote, enforce our sanctions by demanding that all of the other nations around the world don't do business with Iran. And we're going to penalize anybody who does because we decided that Iran is subject to sanctions. And so you've got companies in France and in Germany and in the UK saying, well, wait a minute, our government is telling us that doing oil business with Iran is perfectly legal and it supplies energy to the homes of the citizens of our countries. And we need to do that for the well-being of our country. And the United States says, well, we're the United States and we control the currency system that all this stuff is settled in and you can't do it because we said so. That's the reality of the world that we live in. And I think that U.S. policymakers are going to eventually regret the arrogance that they have shown. But what we've seen in the last just two or three years is it's always been true, or not always, but certainly for the last 20 or 30 years, that countries like China and Russia are not big fans of the dollar's hegemony over the global financial system, because China and Russia have historically been pitted in competition or opposing the United States politically. But the European Union has always been an ally of the United States. What we've seen in the last year is the EU publicly taking an official position at the United Nations in New York City, standing shoulder to shoulder, literally, with the Iranian finance minister and saying, look, we see the actions of the United States government as interfering with free commerce. The bad guy on the international stage here is the United States government, and we, the EU, are going to work on creating an alternative to the SWIFT payment system, which the United States government doesn't have undue influence over. This is a huge change. We haven't seen the EU and Western countries taking China and Russia's side of this argument before. So there's, I think, a sea change, and it's coming from extremely outspoken, to my thinking, arrogant American foreign policy. Now, if you had a change in leadership in the United States and a change in that policy, it might change things. But at the moment, I think the world at large is becoming increasingly frustrated with the U.S. dollar's hegemony over the global financial system. And that opens the door for someone else to come in with a better mousetrap. And I think digital currency provides that better mousetrap, where instead of saying we're going to replace the dollar with the euro or the yen or some other currency, you say we're going to replace the dollar with a digital currency, which offers all kinds of new benefits that we didn't have before. And I think that's where we're ultimately headed.
But it does rely on trust. So how do you get trust behind that digital currency?
Well, remember that one of the advantages of a digital currency system, and this, again, is predicated on breaking that proof of work barrier, is that it creates a distributed database which is ownerless, which means that there, you know, you have a trust issue, which is if you're going to use the U.S. dollar as the world's global reserve currency, you've got to trust the U.S. government to some extent because they could change the rules on you. With a digital currency system, you can design the currency system so the rules cannot be changed by any one party, including the creator or originator of that currency system. And so I think you get a new architecture of trust that's enabled by technology, which offers the world a better solution where there is no one government that has to be trusted because all of the governments of the world are participating in this distributed ledger network, which validates transactions, and it eliminates the ability of any one government to act in a unilateral capacity to change the rules on everyone else, as the U.S. has been able to do in the past. So I think you can engineer the currency system for the explicit purpose of creating a different architecture of trust. Now, there's a big communication gap. Frankly, right now, central bankers don't even understand what Bitcoin is. So to get to understanding why you have a different balance of priorities around trust and dependence on the issuing government, if you were to move to a supranational digital currency system, there's a lot of technology education that would have to happen before policymakers would really understand that proposition. And I don't think we're there yet, but I think that's the direction we're headed in.
And I get digital currency. When we get to the sovereign bond market, Is it just making it bigger so it's the same deal, or is a digital sovereign bond market even possible? What does it depend on?
I think a digital sovereign bond market is a complete game changer, and it really plays into the notion of global reserve currency. So let's take a second just to review what a global reserve currency is. A lot of people would tell you it's the currency in which international trade is settled. That's a true statement, but that's really not what the definitional meaning is. When we say reserve currency, we're talking about the currency in which central bank reserve assets, foreign exchange reserves, are denominated. So central banks around the world need to have a piggy bank, a savings account, if you will, that is denominated not in their own currency, but in some other currency, so that if their own currency begins to collapse, they've got plenty of somebody else's money system on hand in cash to buy their own currency with in order to defend their currency in a crisis. Historically, the U.S. dollar has served in that role, and there's a lot of reasons that the U.S. dollar is stuck in that role. And probably the biggest one is that what central banks want to hold is not cash, which doesn't produce any interest, but some kind of sovereign bond. They don't want to hold U.S. dollar cash. They want to hold U.S. treasury bonds, which are denominated in U.S. dollars, so that they can raise U.S. dollar cash very quickly if they need to in a crisis, but they can be paid interest in the meantime. So whose currency system is really at the center of the global economy? Is it based on the currency system itself? I would argue not really. It's based on how appealing the sovereign bonds are, which are issued in that currency. And the reason, in my opinion, that the U.S. dollar has managed to hang on to its title as world's global reserve currency, even as so many different nations around the world have become frustrated with that situation in the last 30 or 40 years. How is it possible that the U.S. has held that title of global reserve currency? I believe the answer is simply that there is no viable alternative to the U.S. Treasury bond market for central bank reserve assets. So my contention is, if what your goal is, let's say you're China and Russia, you want to see the replacement of the U.S. dollar as the global reserve currency with something else, you can't just assert a digital RMB or a digital ruble and say, let's everybody use that, because China and Russia don't have sovereign bond markets that would offer securities suitable, that would satisfy the needs of central bankers for reserve assets. On the other hand, if you design a digital currency system with an integral digital sovereign bond market, so that you're creating those treasury securities, those securities that are denominated in this new digital currency system, but which can be issued by governments around the world as sovereign bonds, now you're giving the central bankers what they need in order to be able to adopt that digital currency system as the world's global reserve currency. So I think the secret sauce, if you will, if you were trying to cause the replacement of the U.S. dollar, and this is something that is very much in China and Russia's interest to achieve, whether they do it or somebody else does it isn't that important to them, but they want to see the U.S. dollar displaced and taken out of that role of global reserve currency. The way to make that happen is for there to be a digital sovereign bond market, which allows central bankers to hold assets denominated in this new currency system as their foreign exchange reserves. And for that reason, I think the digital sovereign bond market is an absolutely essential ingredient of a digital currency system in order for it to eventually advance to the point of replacing the U.S. dollar as the world's global reserve currency. Now, we're still quite a ways off from that. Central bankers haven't even figured out what these things are yet and how they work. But eventually, I think that's the direction we're headed in.
So where do international boundaries fit in, and where does foreign exchange fit in?
Well, that's a very good question. There have always been globalists who thought that it would be better if we didn't have foreign exchange, if there was just one global currency system that the whole world runs on. We can't really do that. And the reason is, or at least the reason economists would give you, is that different economies around the world are at different points in their credit cycles. And what central bankers do is to manage the economy through the currency system in order to encourage lending or discourage lending, to either stimulate or slow down the pace of growth in the economy. And they try to manage inflation and economic growth and so forth through these levers of control. And the argument has been that if you were to have a single global currency, and by that I mean a conventional currency system like the dollar or the euro, well, there would have to be just one monetary policy for the entire world, and one size does not fit all. Different countries around the world have different needs. They need to have different currency systems so that those currency systems can be managed or used as a tool of managing those local economies. Now, my contention is that with digital currency technology, we potentially have the opportunity to expand these definitions quite a bit and get to a point where you could have one global currency system, which is segregated into monetary policy zones so that certain geographies have a different accounting, if you will, or a different set of monetary policy tools about the creation of these currency units within their own economy. But those units of currency are still fungible across a global digital currency system. So I think the dynamics of whether or not there's even a good reason to have separate currency systems and foreign exchange in the first place comes back under the microscope, and we'd have to look at it. Certainly, the world is used to having this idea of no government trusts any other to be in charge of everything. Therefore, we all have to have our own currency systems. What you can do with digital currency technology is create a currency system that no government is completely in charge of, that nobody has to trust because nobody is the owner or autocratic manager of that currency system. It's actually controlled through a process where all of the countries participating in it have a say in it. So you get to a new architecture of trust that maybe we don't need to have foreign exchange, but if we don't need foreign exchange, what are the knock-on effects and consequences of that? As you know, foreign exchange and the notion of different countries having their own sovereign currency systems is so deeply ingrained in all facets of the financial system that just figuring out what all the different knock-on effects and consequences of moving away from that toward a single global digital currency system, it would take years of study just to figure out what the side effects would be, never mind whether or not the direct effects would be beneficial or not beneficial. So we've got a lot of work to do, but it certainly is possible to overcome the reasons in the past for not, or the principal reasons that I've heard cited for not having a single global digital currency or a single global currency system, regardless of whether it's digital or otherwise.
It's a complete paradigm shift. So if you were given the task of introducing a digital currency, how would you go about it?
Well, it's funny you should ask that, because I'm just in the process of rewriting the final chapter in the book. And what I would do is I would talk to the boys on Sand Hill Road, which is where the venture capitalists live in the United States. And I'd say, look, if you want to know what is the startup opportunity that's not just bigger than Google or bigger than Amazon or bigger than Facebook, but it's bigger than all of those FANG stocks combined, it is the creation of a independent digital central bank, which becomes a public entity, a global organization like the IMF or the World Bank. But what it does is it contracts the development of its technology to a partner which is created by venture capitalists and Silicon Valley. And what I would do is I would figure out how to bring the best minds from digital currency, which mostly are people that have been working on cryptocurrencies and some of the other applications of distributed ledger and finance. I'd bring the very best minds in the industry together, and I'd say, guys, look, I know that a lot of you hold very strong personal political beliefs that it would be great to upstage the government and take the power away from government and create a currency system that the government has no control over. That's what Bitcoin was conceived to do. Look, we live in a world where the governments are in charge. And whether we like it or not, the government is going to be in charge of creating the digital currency system that really defines the future of the planet. We have a choice to make. Our choice is either we can thumb our noses at it and keep working on our cryptocurrencies and eventually be outlawed by the governments who are really in charge. Or the other is we can take an approach of if you can't beat them, join them, and do a far better job than the government ever could have done of designing and engineering a global digital currency system, which is designed to eventually become the new global reserve currency, replacing the US dollar in that role, which is based on a trust architecture where no one government has authority over the entire system, where there are far more effective monetary policy tools, and in which we completely re-engineer the 500-year-old fractional reserve banking system, which sits at the center of the global monetary system. And we re-engineer it with something that is better and which enables humanity to benefit by having more effective credit mechanisms, more effective monetary policy tools that allow governments to more effectively manage the economy. And we design something using good old entrepreneurial ingenuity, which is far better than anything governments ever could have done. And yes, as hard as it might be for some of our libertarian political values, we design it so that it will appeal to the central bankers rather than designing something designed to frustrate the central bankers. We then sell it to the central bankers of the world, and our sales pitch is, look, this is going to be a currency system where the Americans are not in control and in a position to tell everybody else what to do. Furthermore, neither is anyone else. It's a new architecture of trust in which no one government is in control of the currency system, but rather the currency system exists to serve all of the people of the world equally, and it's designed using technology to prevent any one government from abusing its authority. I think all of those things are very much possible and within reach. Certainly, it depends on some technology that is not fully implemented yet, but we know how to get there. And I think that that is the undertaking that Silicon Valley and Sand Hill Road need to be focused on.
Eric, it's been fascinating. Thank you very much for your time. And I think that all of our listeners will want to read the book. So where do they find it?
The best place to go for information on the book is macrovoices.com/BB for Beyond Blockchain. Now, that's a landing page at the Macro Voices website. Macro Voices, as you mentioned earlier, is the podcast which I host on Thursday evenings. The reason for that page is it has the audiobook as well as the Kindle and paperback versions. Kindle and paperback are on Amazon. The audiobook is on another platform called Awesound. The landing page that I just gave you, macrovoices.com/BB, has links to all of the different versions.
Eric, thank you very much indeed for your time. It's been a complete pleasure.
It's been my pleasure as well. You ask fantastic questions. Thanks so much for having me on.